So we're going to start with a quick story. I want you to imagine me, Andrew Rausch, host of this podcast. Hi. Back in time, it's high school. I'm in my AP US History class sitting at my desk when my teacher tells all of us that he's going to be reviewing our notebooks. He wants to see if we've been taking good notes, and this seems like a reasonable thing to do, but when I pull out my spiral notebook and take a look inside at what I've been doing over the past few weeks, well, what I see is not a bulleted list of notes, but, well, a lot of cartoons. You see, that was my note-taking method, and I didn't know at the time, but this is an actual method for taking notes. You can graphically organize things by drawing little cartoons, making little word bubbles, things like that. But I was a little nervous, so when my teacher comes around and takes a look at my notebook and starts laughing, well, I got more nervous, let's put it that way. But then he does something extraordinary. He takes my notebook, he goes to the class in the front of the room, and he shows it. And he says, Andrew's been drawing these cartoons to keep up with the notes. And there it was, right there in the page, little cartoons of Confederate and Union soldiers, for example. And my teacher liked this. He thought it was a great idea. And it really changed the way I thought about how I was learning. Well, we're going to delve into this topic this week because in this week's meeting of the EdTech Club, we're talking about comics, both making them and reading them as a tool for education. So if you're a fan of comics, graphic novels, superheroes perhaps, and just about anything that has to do with the art of illustration and drawing and how it might help in education, oh, and by the way, how we can connect technology to that, well, you're in for a treat in this week's meeting. So we're talking about all of that and, of course, even more. And it all starts right now. Hey everybody, welcome back to the EdTech Club. I'm Andrew Rausch, and this week we're talking with Ben Humanick, an educator from the Houston area, who's been using comics to connect with students. I'll let him introduce himself.
I am an educator based out of the Woodlands, Texas. I teach for Conroe ISD, and in my current position, I teach ESL to newcomers to the United States, and I also teach English literature classes to students who are taking pre-AP courses. I also co-proctor a comics club on our senior campus with my colleague Russ Eckhart, who's a math teacher. And so we have regular kind of workshop sessions that we do biweekly with students there. And we also create a student anthology comic that we take to a local convention in Houston called Comic Palooza every May. And the school district helped us get that started with an innovative educational grant a couple years ago, for which we are immensely grateful.
I talked with Ben, of course, about how he got started using comics as an educational tool and how he started a comics club at his school.
That's a great question. I think initially started out of just like discovered shared interests. Russ and I realized that we both loved comics and not just comics, but kind of the more obscure parts of comics. Mm-hmm. He had taken a stab at writing his own comics, a property that he's developing called Grimworld, with a friend based on, based on a D&D campaign, not too dissimilar from like the Adventure Zone comics, which are really popular right now. And I myself had a chance to publish a little bit with some smaller presses. I've got a graphic novel called Waking Life out through Comicer Press from Austin, Minnesota. And I also have a series of STEM-based graphic novels called The Magnificent Makers that are out through Power Kids Press, which is a school library publisher based out of New York. So we both had a passion for the craft, not just from an enjoyment side, but also a participation side. And realized we had more than a few students who were eager to do the same thing, but maybe didn't necessarily know the ins and outs of comic making technique, the comics industry. And we wanted to give them kind of an advanced look at it so that they could consider doing that as a career option and maybe take that passion and find ways that it could maybe channel back into what they're already doing in a classroom with reading and writing and problem solving.
Next, it was important to ask Ben about the educational value of comic books and graphic novels.
That's a fair question. So we actually took time to map out which of the current Texas State TEKS correlate to the Comics Club. And we found that we basically cut across kind of career and vocational TEKS, visual arts TEKS, and a lot of ELA TEKS or English language arts TEKS at the same time. But I think to make it really like nice and neat, students are multimodal, right? Like their literacy looks very different than just pure prose writing and reading. They're used to image and text going together in virtually any form of social interaction over a device. Like memes are lingua franca for many of our students these days. And comics are a natural cousin to that, where you're taking the image, you're taking the text, and you're fusing those to create meaning. So we figured this caters to the literacy students already have. It takes the interest of kids who are really immersed in that craft and helps them become more fluent in the language of how to create it, how to format it, put it together. And, you know, one thing we found, even in just my English language classroom, where I keep a steady supply of graphic novels and comics on a spinner rack, is that some of my hesitant readers who have an effective barrier can acclimate to reading prose books by reading comics first, and then can even continue to find comics of sufficient depth and complexity and robust storytelling to really challenge them and help them grow as readers. So we think there's a lot of merit there just in terms of English TEKS and literacy, but also, you know, preparing them to understand the nature of visual arts as a vocation. And in terms of image making and meaning, we thought there was a lot of meat on the bone there as well.
After all, nowadays, and perhaps always, people are primed for visual communication. Think about how much you can express in emojis, for example. So I put that to Ben. How can this aspect of comic books help students develop literacy and storytelling skills and text interpretation skills?
There kind of gets to be a snobbery associated with prose in some ways, that it's the most valid way to communicate an idea. Admittedly, you can go the most in-depth with prose. You can take your time to unwind a thing at length and really tease out the nuance and the depth of it. But I think just because of the sheer amount of visual communication that we do as a society now, we're kind of forced to admit that ancient truth that, yeah, pictures get things across pretty quickly. And it's not a step down to use that. It's actually a very smart part of an arsenal for a modern communicator.
I was also curious about how thinking in terms of comics and graphic novels, thinking in terms of visuals, in terms of these successive panels, can help students storyboard ideas, can help them think through ideas and plan, help them visually organize, just the way I was visually organizing my notes by accident by drawing little cartoons in my U.S. history notes.
I think there's something freeing about even just realizing you can do this with stick figures, right? You don't have to be an expert draftsman to tell a story. You just need to know the mechanics of story and have those down pat. And that's a skill set that I think people can acquire maybe a little bit more quickly than artistic expertise and craft, which I think takes years to master.
Indeed, skill, at least in terms of artistic skill, isn't the biggest part of it. Imagine how much story you can tell with just those stick figures. Think, for example, of a little flip book. You can tell an entire narrative on a little pad of post-it notes just with stick figures.
Yeah, absolutely. As long as the pictures are consistent, within kind of the idiom that the creator is making, you can really get away with a lot. It's kind of awesome.
Now, since Ben teaches English language learners, people learning English as a second language, I had to ask him how comics might help them as they grow and become fluent in English.
One thing we've been doing quite a bit is having the students read independently in class on a regular basis. I see my students every day for 90 minutes. So at least 10 minutes of that time is them spinning it in front of a text. And my students have found a lot of comfort in graphic novels that are written in English because they can use the visuals to help backstop the meaning of the captions and the dialogue balloons. I've got one girl, for instance, who is reading Charles Schulz's original 1950 to 1952 run of Peanuts. Wow. And there's some like outdated cultural language she'll ask about, but for the most part, she gets it and she loves it. And she's to the point where she's like, I got to buy a Charlie Brown t-shirt now with the little like, you know, the yellow shirt with the squiggle on it. You know, because Charlie Brown's my jam. So, I mean, in terms of removing that effective barrier, getting kids comfortable with reading, I mean, comics can be very international and be an ambassador in that sense. And we just finished a project where they made a comic by sequencing 4 to 6 pieces of the story they've been reading, whether it was a graphic novel or a prose book, and kind of breaking down some of those major moments with captions there. So they're regurgitating information in comics form too, and showing their understanding of the plot, of the major events, of who the characters are. And it's a cool way for me as an educator to do a formative assessment and be like, okay, they get it. Like, they're really on the way. That shows transfer, which is the goal we're after in education, right? Like, can they take this skill and move it into a different domain and continue practicing it? So yeah, whenever they're able to visually do that, I think there's a lot of promise and a lot of assurance there.
Now, if you're intrigued by all of this, maybe you're thinking of doing this yourself or incorporating some of these aspects, you have to wonder, nothing in life is free. So what does it take to get started? I asked Ben what it took for him to start his comics club.
Yeah, our district's pretty great. They've got an innovative educational grant program they offer every year, and they're looking for educators to step up to the table and say, here's something I think we could do that really helps students learn. And we had established an advisory class on our freshman campus the year that we applied for the grant, where kids were already in a room working on comics activities, doing workshop stuff. And we kind of had a twofold goal. Number one, we wanted to get the funds necessary to pay for a table at a comic convention and to print up a book of student comics, because it's a lot of the comics industry requires you going to events and hand selling your work. It's kind of unique in that respect. We wanted kids to see what that looked like from an early stage. And then we also wanted to see if there was a way that we could get technology involved. So we wrote a part of the grant to acquire some iPad Pros with Apple Pencils that we could put software on where kids could actually do some digital image making. And the district saw both parts of that as being valuable and awarded the grant for the project. And we were able to make the purchase for the iPads and get to the show. And that created enough momentum and interest for us to take those freshman kids in that class and to establish a comics advisory on the senior campus once they moved on to the campus that houses our 11th, 10th, and 12th graders. That's now an ongoing concern.
As we talked, I thought back to my school experience, not just drawing those little cartoons in history class, and I remembered a very important graphic novel called Mouse. Maybe you've heard of this one, Mouse, M-A-U-S. It's kind of a Germanicized version of the word mouse. It was a very popular graphic novel developed in the 80s by Art Spiegelman. It won a Pulitzer Prize, and it used anthropomorphized animals, what they call funny animals in the comics biz, to represent different ethnicities during the time of Nazi rule in Germany. It was a very serious graphic novel on a very serious subject, and it got a lot of credence and a lot of use in education, at least when I was coming up. So I had to ask Ben about that.
Yeah, I think when you've got a Pulitzer Prize attached to it, it's easier to get inside the door. I think that's true. And we had some debate about this at Austin during the educators panel, because Mouse has some mature content in it. I mean, they're, you know, not necessarily in terms of graphic stuff. I mean, certainly there is death. It does deal with the Holocaust. But even in terms of like marital infidelity and how that affects the author of the story. In my initial, you know, stance is like, yeah, I don't know, this may not be good for young readers, but there was another educator there that kind of pushed back and said, you know what, I think kids who are mature and ready for this kind of thing could take this because of the way that it's represented symbolically, right? You know, all the characters in the story are classified by different animal groups, and maybe there's a little bit of a shock and awe factor that gets worn off when that's the case. So, I mean, there's so many things that Mouse does well. Spiegelman has not produced a huge body of work in his lifetime, but I think with that one work alone, he has pried the doors open.
Of course, we also had to delve into some of the popular works that have gotten into education since Mouse, and he gave us a few examples.
I mean, I think an easy list might be Persepolis by Marjane Satrapi.
Oh, sure, sure.
Her memoir is a big one. Depends on some circles. Watchmen, you know, has found an embrace in some schools. Dark Knight Returns. But, you know, here we're talking about work that's all existed from the 1980s and 90s. I think it's Satrapi's case. Persepolis came out in the late 90s, maybe the early 2000s. But you know, more recent graphic novels that have gotten in there that have a lot of complexity and depth. I don't know. I'm using American Born Chinese with my ESL students starting next week. Nominated for the American Book Award. Gene Yang used to be a teacher. I mean, he kind of gets what makes students tick. So I'm glad that's there. But yeah, I think there's a small canon of graphic novels that have found embrace in the classroom, probably more graphic novels that librarians are advocating for even beyond that. But it'll be interesting to see what gets added to that, you know, over the next few years and decades as the form continues to grow.
One thing I was thinking about when it comes to comics is representation. This is an important aspect of listening to, reading, and exploring stories in education because students want to see themselves represented in the things they study. And comics have always been a place where maybe slightly less popular or less mainstream stories get told.
Comics has kind of always been a place where the outsider can find some refuge. And I think a diverse array of voices that has enjoyed that literature for years is finding purchase in the broader marketplace, especially when it comes to kids' graphic novels and stuff that's being published through Big Five publishers. There's already a push towards diversity in YA, towards own voices. And I think that since graphic novels are a growing part of the major bookstore publishing market, that tide is carrying them into that realm as well.
So with all this in mind, thinking about how it can be a useful educational tool and a useful after-school activity, something fun, something students can connect to, I asked Ben about the response he got when he started the Comics Club.
We made it known first that we were having an advisory on our freshman campus. So kids are already there, they don't have to travel, and they've got an option what to do with this kind of twice a week random class that we're doing. So we had about, I think, 20 kids that first year show up. And connecting back to the diversity piece, the majority of my students were female. And when it came to looking at ethnicities, a very small percentage of them were white males. I mean, clearly this was an audience that was primed from a whole bunch of different vectors to be making stuff and collaborating. That was really cool. And it continues to be the case over the past 3 years that we've been doing that advisory and club activity. We just got a really diverse bunch getting in there and making stuff and sharing what they love. And the trick of a comics club right now is we're trying to balance three different streams. Kids who are passionate about the craft but don't necessarily want to make it. Kids who want to approach it from the writing side. And then kids who want to approach it from the drawing side. You know, those are three really different conversations to have. And we're putting all of these groups in the same basket. So we're kind of threading the needle a little bit to make sure we're hitting all three groups as we have those conversations, but we are starting to see those connections. And our big hope is that the kids who appreciate it would be able to maybe act as editors or supervisors or guides for those who want to make it, and that those who want to write it find people that they can partner with who want to draw it, and vice versa. And that those connections based around putting work in an anthology can be a springboard towards continuing this practice for a lifetime, for a vocation.
So the final question, you're convinced, you're excited, you're ready to draw some comics. How do you get started? Let's see what Ben has to say.
I think the first thing is you need space, you need supplies, and you need to get the word out. Because you've already got kids in your school who are doodling their original characters in their notebooks and who are looking at reference on Pinterest and Instagram all the time and who are probably already putting their stuff on those same networks and Tumblr and DeviantArt to get feedback. Just to let them know there's a place to come together and play, I think we'll have them immediately starting to emerge to see what's up. And I think as long as the person guiding that program is somebody who can give affirmative feedback, that's going to continue to perpetuate growth. A lot of times, young student artists don't show their stuff off a lot because they're afraid of judgment. You know, they don't want someone to shoot it down and say, you're terrible, you suck, go back to doing something else. I think they need permission to get out there and to make imperfect work and to find out that it still has people who appreciate it. I think that's a big part of where teachers and mentors can come in. It's just being that encouraging hand to say, you've got this, like keep going with it. But yeah, I think if you've got the space and you make that known and you've got some pens and pencils for people to work with, you'll start seeing people come because they're already out there.
All right, well, that's just about all the time we have for our guest speaker, Ben Humanick. Thanks very much to him for talking with us this week. But don't worry, we've got more for you if you're interested in this topic. First up, Don't forget to do your homework. Check the show notes, check out the stories and links there to learn a little bit more about comics in education. Then, if you really want to go the extra mile, you can earn some extra credit. So if you're looking to draw some comics or get your students drawing some comics, I have a good suggestion, courtesy of TCEA. See, TCEA is the exclusive provider of free 6-month licenses to Clip Studio Paint, which is a great illustration software you can use to make comics, illustrations, and animations. So if you want to look into that and see if you want to use it, check it out. It's at tcea.org/resources/ClipStudioPaint, or check it out in the show notes. As always, if you have any questions, comments, and concerns, hit us up at podcast@tcea.org. And don't forget to keep up with the latest from TCEA and our Tech Notes blog. You can follow us on social media. Just look for TCEA, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and more. And of course, if you enjoy this show, don't forget to rate and review us in Apple Podcasts or your podcast player. It helps the show out a lot. So that's it for this week's meeting. Now, we will not be back next week because Thanksgiving is upon us, and we're going to take a little break to think about all the great educational technologies and methods and ideas we've been talking about, and think about how thankful we are for all the great people doing great work out there. And by the way, if you are listening and you're an educator, we are thankful for you. So have a great Thanksgiving week, and we will be back the following week with another meeting of the EdTech Club. Until then, I'm Andrew Rausch. Thanks for being a part of the club. EdTech Club is a production of TCEA. To learn more and to join, go to tcea.org.